of the hour, we'll take your calls. It's interactive with Robert Young Pelton. Now, he is live in Malta. We've got him on Skype tonight, and we'll get to your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Robert Young Pelton with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Robert, the group called ISIS, though, does seem to have legs, and it seemed to have gelled pretty darn fast. That doesn't happen by accident. I mean, how did this migration occur?
Well, if you look at Al-Qaeda, which was a similar group, Al-Qaeda had a centralized command structure. They relied on outside donors, and there were some control mechanisms. ISIS essentially is self-funded through the oil sales and smuggling and taxation, and they don't have the same kind of control mechanisms that Al-Qaeda had. That means that ISIS can spread faster. It can be more creative or more flexible. So you'll see ISIS pop up, let's say, in Libya, where they'll find a small insurgent group that's not getting very far and say, well, why don't you be ISIS? We'll send a filmmaker and a trainer. You cut some people's heads off, and suddenly you're on the global news. So that's what ISIS is doing. It's basically a marketing arm for small insurgencies around the world.
Okay. And as we look at this growth pattern that is out there, do you think social networking, you know, Twitter and Facebook contributed a lot to their growth?
Globalization of information allows us to see everything everywhere all the time. And yeah. if something resonates within somebody, whether it's outrage or love or appreciation, it goes viral, as they say, meaning that you suddenly find thousands of people that feel the exact same way you do that you've never met. Now, you don't know who those people are, but you can also manipulate those same mechanisms to make people angry and make them sad. So we live in a world of propaganda.
Robert, what happened to Al-Qaeda? I know they're still out there, but, I mean, we just don't hear too much about them anymore.
Yeah, they're like a classic rock band. They used to be really popular.
And then they ran out of gigs. Unless you're ZZ Top, they keep on going.
Exactly. No, Al-Qaeda, with the death of bin Laden, lost a lot of its support in the Gulf states. And ISIS was a much more pragmatic, smaller, faster-growing organization. Al-Qaeda does still exist, though. It still has cells, it still has franchises, but it doesn't have the same global impact because it doesn't know how to handle media. Remember all these crappy videos with the shaky finger thing?
Yeah, horrible.
That was the pinnacle of their propaganda campaign.
That's right. I mean, now ISIS, I think they have some kind of television production company somewhere.
They're like Vice from hell, if you watch Vice TV, you know, very slick, very fast-paced SLR type of videos. They're very slick. They're very smart.
Music, everything else, and they make it work. Do you think, you know, there's the group Anonymous, which is trying to take down and hack into these kinds of sites, but do you think Twitter and Facebook as companies should be doing a better job schooling those sites and just simply clipping them?
Yeah, actually, I want to expand that a bit. I think we keep talking today about religious tolerance and letting people have free speech. But if I say I'm going to come over to your house and kill you, is that free speech or is that a criminal act?
I think that's a criminal act. It's a threat.
Yeah, so if ISIS is saying we're coming to Detroit, we're going to kill you, that doesn't seem like free speech.
No, absolutely not. So clip them. Why don't they do that?
Well, not only should they clip them, but they should expose who they are. Because a lot of these are just kids. I mean, they're not real threats. They're just people amplifying threats.
Right. No, you're right.
Like the guy that yells fire in the theater, there is no fire. He just wants to see people panic. And this is what you're seeing right now.
Or the guy who calls in some kind of threat, he's some little punk on the other end of a phone.
Right. So this needs to be brought to the forefront that 99% of what ISIS does is not actually shoot or behead or kill people. It's just terrify people through statements and films and tweets, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Final hour to go here with Robert Young Pelton. Carlos is with us in Hawaii on Oahu. Hello, Carlos. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Robert. Robert, you touched on one of my points that I was going to bring up. I have about four quick different questions for you. My first question was just what you deliberated on before. Is ISIS one consolidated, centralized entity, or is it in fact a coalition of forces? And you did touch upon that. But one of the factors that I think is interesting is that We armed with $500 million of U.S.-made weaponry and equipment and vehicles, an entity that retreated and turned all of that weaponry and equipment over to ISIS.
Yep.
Have we actually been financing entities that serve as fifth columns to ISIS? That's one question. And another is that it seems that there are people who are financing players in this schism of power. And I know that Robert Chavez, the offshore entity which operates out of the Cayman Islands, the BCCI, well, they're financing someone, but of course their objective would be oil, because they're very self-serving in nature. And my question is to the arms producers, Yugoslavia, which is one of the largest arms manufacturing companies in Europe. Are they supplying ISIS? Is ISIS obtaining equipment from Yugoslavia, which is what the company used to be known as? And also, does ISIS have access to gamma weaponry? And could gamma weaponry have been used when they did a demonstration of bringing down the Russian jetliner, the passenger plane? Could they, in fact, have been using a gamma ray to bring down that plane to demonstrate to the Russians that they do, in fact, have gamma weaponry?
Okay, that's a lot of questions. So gamma rays, I know nothing about. I doubt it's. I saw the video, so I know what it was shot down. It was shot down by a TOW missile, which is an American-made product which was supplied to the rebels. As for ISIS being a large centralized group, no, all insurgencies are based on a small group of intellectuals who formulate the ideas and the sort of manual, and then it is propagated to the masses, which are the less educated, sort of more angry populations. The funds to do this are actually in the manual. It's almost like an Amway kit where they teach you how to tax local populations, and they provide you with the startup fund. So they'll typically send about three or four trainers. And we saw this in Afghanistan with the Taliban as well. They send a core group of trainers, financiers, and propagandists. They recruit local people. They start blowing things up. They get people scared, and then they grow through taxation, intimidation, extortion, kidnapping, et cetera. So it's a well-known path for growth. What I was focusing on in this hour was that they've been able to amplify that through the media by creating very slick videos that are completely fictitious that get us terrified. In other words, they said they're going to attack a number of cities in the U.S. That's just an attempt to terrorize people without any substance to it.
Yeah, you could do it just by doing a little video. You don't even have to show up.
Right. So the murder, the cold-blooded murder of civilians, the murder of women and children, crucifixions, beheadings, these are all designed to terrorize people using the internet and the media as amplifiers. So we should stop and think about what happens when you broadcast one guy murdering one person and broadcast it to billions of people.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. And in terms of the growth structure of ISIS, do you see it growing bigger and bigger, or are we going to have a reduction?
No, it's going to get larger and larger until somebody decides that ISIS actually is a real threat intellectually, not necessarily militarily. But, you know, let's talk about when people do marketing to people like weight loss, right? It's the same basic concept. You find people who want to do something, you sell them that, you give them the tools to get other people involved, and then it spreads. So it's like pyramid marketing. It has the exact same structure to it. You can also fight it the same way. You can say, look, this is an ad. When I see an ISIS ad where they're threatening to do, that's an ad. That's a recruitment ad. So why are we allowing the media to do that when I couldn't put a recruitment ad for my company on there?
Right, exactly. Who's getting rich with ISIS? Somebody is.
There's a huge growth in intelligence tools and devices. We're trying to use very sophisticated network mapping software. We're listening to everybody's phone calls. We're chapping everybody's emails, and we've got all these robots that go through and look for people that are talking about certain keywords. So I would say the intelligence community is getting very wealthy with these sort of useless tools on trying to put together massive amounts of data, big data. So you see it when they say, oh, this guy came through a certain country, that there's a huge database of people that has to be combed over and over again on a global basis. So that's where the money is.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Keith is with us. Keith, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Pelton, I agree with all your arguments except for one. You say America is a land of migrants. Well, that's irrefutable, undeniable. But I think what you fail to consider, as do many people who like to use that argument to justify mass immigration, is that every spot on the globe, every habitable landmass, every country on the face of the earth is a land of immigrants. And I don't hear anybody using that argument on them. In fact, when Turkey shot down the Russian fighter, people were saying, well, Turkey has a right to defend its territory. Every country has a right to defend its borders. I guess every country except America. So that's an unjustifiable and bogus argument that needs to cease.
Well, let me answer your question with a reality check. Yes, if you look at a map of the world, you'll see lines, you'll see rules about visas, and you and I both travel legally, so we have to have a passport. But the reality is, look at the flow of people everywhere, not just in Europe, but in the Middle East, but look at the number of people flowing into America without going through this process. So I'm making the very simple point that this is existing, this flow of people worldwide. Something like 59 million people are displaced from their homes, and they're all moving somewhere. So I'm not supporting the idea that they should come and live in your backyard. I'm saying they are coming. They are moving.
Lance is in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program, Lance. You're up with Robert Young Pelton.
Hey, thank you, George. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Great. I'm glad you got through.
I wanted to add something with the comment of ISIS. Why I feel that it's probably a bigger threat than most people are willing to even admit to or want to acknowledge. And the reason of that is that everybody's pretty familiar with someone, if they die as a martyr for Islam, about the 70 versions, everyone's heard that one. But there's actually more rewards in the hadith or the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, where it mentions that if someone dies for Islam, that 70 family members of theirs who were meant for hellfire, that they'll be able to save them from hellfire and bring them to paradise with them. Also on that, that before their blood even touches the ground, that all of their sins will be forgiven. So you have a lot of young people who might have been looking at their own lives, seeing the wrong that they've done, and want to start trying to repent to their Creator, that decide to do some of these mass atrocities, thinking they're going to seek that forgiveness and save their own parents and brothers and sisters, etc.
But this is cult thinking. This is not Islam. This is not a religious idea. To think that you've lived a life of sin and then suddenly by sinning more, you suddenly are better, this is cultish thinking, not religious thinking.
Insane thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is what happens when you put people in an isolated environment and work on them.
Let me ask you about the parents of these thugs. Where are they out there in the Middle East? Do they have any control of the kids at all? I mean, these are all 20-some-year-old kids.
Oh, you bring up a very good point. So in the Middle East, which is essentially a tribal and very tightly knit social structure, there used to be pressures from the tribal group. So let's say in a tribal society, your teenager steals something or shoots somebody, they punish the whole family.
That's right.
That creates checks and balances. That's all destroyed now. And this is why you're seeing ISIS coming out of the Middle East, out of places like Libya, Syria, because those family structures are gone. So there's no control over these people.
I bet mothers, fathers probably don't even know where their kids are in some cases.
Well, I brought up the idea of the substitute teacher coming in to teach and how kids react versus the normal
teacher. We always thought we had a free ride when the substitute came in.
And this is what you're seeing in the Middle East, is the destruction of control mechanisms or leadership and the ability of a young, frustrated, sexually frustrated, you know, testosterone-laced 15-year-old mm-hmm. doing stupid things.
I feel sorry for the good people in the Middle East, the loving people in the Middle East, and there are many who are being displaced and their lives are being corrupted by all this.
And by the way, this is a global problem. So when I see something in France and I'm in Malta and people see it in Chicago and Los Angeles, we all hurt, you know, we all feel sad for the families, the people that were injured and killed. So this is now being a global problem, not just the Middle East, it's every place in the world.
We go next to Jeff in La Quinta, California. Jeffrey, thanks for calling. You are on the air with us. Welcome to the program.
George, I love the show, your website, and the articles. They just keep me, you know, fascinated. And Mr. Pelton, I've got to tell you, hearing you on the radio, I immediately picture your swashbuckling look and with San Diego in the background when I see you on TV. And I'm wondering, is this guy married or has he got a thousand loves? And I would assume it's probably a mixture of both. But let me tell you, I live out here in La Quinta. I take care of my 87-year-old mother, right? We've got Syrians coming across the border within 60 miles of me. So I go out and I arm myself. And I buy an AR-15 and a 1911. My mom's saying, well, my God, what's the situation? And I'm scared of these guns. Now, my point is, I was in the military, and I worked in some serious stuff, and I know that we have velocity missiles rotating the Earth that don't need radiation, that from sheer velocity could blow out one town in Syria. I also know that you can fly around a C-130 with a wire hanging out the back of it that could put out a sound that would deafen the whole city that you could blow up. And so we have weapons we don't even use. We have ability. I mean, it seems like 18 months ago when people were getting beheaded and the president was golfing, you kind of sat there and went, well, because I was in the military and you have, company readiness and those are the medals you get because you're ready to. And the squadron I was in was a 24-hour squadron. We talked to submarines. So, sure. Something happened. You had to communicate to the submarines. That was the squadron I was in. And, so me over-weaponizing, and I don't even like guns, to be honest with you. I was in the Navy, I was, McHale's Navy. But in any case, it's all education. What do you say? What are the fathers and the mothers doing? They're praying this hate. And the reason they have these refugees is because they kept silent and they didn't say anything about the craziness of their religion, what's happening. And they're going to, what do you do? You keep quiet. And if you're getting bullied on the block to the point where you got to move, that's what you do to save yourself, But it's just craziness. George, I love your show. And Mr. Pelton, I wish you all the luck in the world, and I'll let it go to the next caller.
All right, you got it. We're going to take that next caller after the break. And Robert, will this get solved, in your opinion? I mean, take a guess for me.
No, the future of our planet is very much headed towards chaos. Look at the population growth. Look at the boom in young people. Look at the economy. There is no pot of anything at the end of the rainbow. There might not even be a rainbow.
So we're going to have to live with areas where people get shot up and the killer gets killed or he commits suicide.
Yeah, we're now in the new reality where there are billions of people who don't have things or are angry at things, and there are a few people that have things. So I think we're looking at sort of almost the dark ages when you think of the promise that we had in the 30s and the 40s, thinking that everybody would get a job and be happy, and that just didn't happen.
That's not happening. All right, Robert, we're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls. Those of you on hold, just hang there. Those of you calling, we'll get to you. Okay, we're going to come back in a moment and take your final phone calls with Robert Young Pelton. Next hour, Greg Braden joins us with The Power to Thrive in Life's Extremes. Boy, isn't that poignant right now. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Young Pelton with us. Why do so many people out there, Robert, hate us as Americans?
I disagree because even in the most intense...
Whoop. I'm maybe losing any.
Jihadis, they all wanted green cards and had relatives and lived in Philadelphia and places like that.
The Skype finally was working for a few seconds. Can you hear me, Robert?
I was just going to say that in my times in the front lines in these jihadi camps or with the Taliban, I can hear you fine.
Good. Yeah, Skype was acting up for a moment.
Okay. I was just saying that in my time in the jihadi camps on the front lines, there wasn't a single person that wouldn't take a green card to America, and most of them had relatives in some cities in the U.S. So I think they hate our policies, but I don't think they hate America.
Let's go to Wayne in Buffalo, New York, first-time caller. Wayne, good to have you with us. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, sir?
Good, Wayne.
First-time caller, thank you. I always appreciate your impartial interviews.
I'm calling tonight because I do have a disagreement with your guest on
sure.
the show.
Go ahead.
He keeps trying to compare the ISIS members with gang members in the United States. He's stated that ISIS members, you know, they blow themselves up for notoriety, things like this. He's completely wrong. First of all, they don't do it for notoriety, and I can guarantee you there's not one gang member in the United States or anywhere else in the world that has blown themselves up for notoriety. Not one. So the reason they do it is because of religious purposes. And when people begin to understand that the only reason they're doing this is because they believe it's in their religion, anybody else that doesn't believe what they believe in, we're infidels. So if you don't believe it, they kill you. It's as simple as that.
All right, well, let's get Robert to react to that. Robert, as we talked about earlier, the thugs and the gangs are like ISIS, but they don't blow themselves out. I mean, Wayne is right on that, but I'm still not sure it's about religious ideology. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I spent a lot of time arguing Islam, suicide bombing with these people in their camps in intense situations, and I can tell you over and over again that the idea of blowing yourself up and killing innocent people is not in Islam. It's not a religious idea. It's a nihilistic sort of cultish idea. And when I compare it to gangs, what I'm talking about is sort of the nihilistic path that young people can take in order to get notoriety or, you know, sort of companionship or join something that's more important in their miserable lives.
Right.
These people are guided by sick reverse ideology, meaning that I'm going to do something negative and that'll make me a good person. So I'm not a psychologist, and one day you'll have to get a psychiatrist or a psychologist on your program. But 9 times out of 10, if you look at the backgrounds of these people, even the 9/11 bombers, they are not theocrats. They are not people who lectured in mosques. They're confused young men.
Do you think these confused young men are going through some kind of hypnotherapy, that they're literally being hypnotized to do what they do?
Yeah, so I was in Bangladesh, and I watched a group of kids learning the Quran and in a refugee camp, and I noticed that their instructor made them, you know, they bob back and forth, and they have to memorize the Quran, but he kept hitting them with a stick if they weren't doing it enough. And I've seen how the jihadis will put themselves in remote camps and have lectures from ideologists who talk about how things are, you know, back in the city or in the outside world. These things are not correct, but they slowly form somebody's opinions and motivation. So, yes, it is very much a cult-like, abhorrent behavior. It does not follow any religious track that I'm aware of.
And this entire situation, Robert, has kind of taken the limelight off of Iran, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Iran is actually our ally in trying to defeat Sunni extremists. But then we are still stuck in the old days when we had the hostage situation. So we have demonized Iran, and yet they are actually now our greatest allies in pushing back on extremism in the region. And like I said, we live in a very complex world.
If we cut off the supply of money and oil, how easy is it to shut this down?
It's fairly simple because you need bullets. You know, you need guns. You need people, you need to pay smugglers. These groups, even though they seem like the ideology-driven groups, they're actually finance-driven groups. They have to make things happen. Now, they don't need a lot of money. Like 9/11 costs about $500,000, but they still need money. They still need cell phone mm-hmm. cards. They still need a lot of the mundane, boring things that any group needs. So, yes, that's one way. The second way is we can stop amplifying their efforts. In other words, giving them a free ride, giving them, you know, front page coverage, and we can actually create a section that says, you know, in violent propaganda today, here's a list of all the stupid things people did,
right,
and get on with more important
right.
things.
Why don't we find out the banks they're using and take them out?
Because hawalas are not banks. Hawala is a very old system where I can walk into a place in Dubai, give somebody 10 grand, they give me a tiny piece of paper, and 2 or 3 minutes later, my friend in Somalia, China, whatever, says, got it. So these are not banks of the traditional sense.
Jeez. They must be moving millions.
Of course, trillions, maybe. But this is the old-fashioned. You know, when the pilgrims used to go to the Middle East, the knights used to take their money in the beginning, and then when they got to Jerusalem or when they got to the Holy Land, give them their money. And that's how banks were started. It was started this idea.
Let's go to Vince. Truck driving in Rochester, New York. Hello, Vince. Good morning.
Yes, the thing is, I was wondering, what do you think the chances are that the world leaders could orchestrate a reconstituting of the entire Middle East? I mean, it's like change their minds, like you say. I mean, the problem is the way that they think and their ideas that they have. But that, you know, just like Japan was reconstituted after World War II, but with the Middle East, it would need to be more of a worldwide effort.
This is actually a good idea because we have a hierarchy, you know, of thinking that people in the Middle East think like we do, and of course they're completely able to think like we do, but the social pressures they have are very different. So, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure to be within a certain tribe. If you're born of that tribe, you can't just suddenly leave that tribe. There's a lot of peer pressure to defend your village. So, yes, but at the same time, these people don't have a lot of space for thinking. They have to react. So if they bomb your house, you have about 15 minutes to decide what to do next. So when you become a refugee and you're sitting in this camp for 4 years, once again, you either have to stay in that camp or get out of there. So their decisions are usually driven by necessity, not necessarily ideology or education or constitutions.
Vince, thanks for your call. Henry's in North Hollywood in California. Henry, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I've always been curious since I've read Dangerous Places what Mr. Pelton actually packs in his everyday carry, weapon-wise.
You know, I've done a number of interviews on this, but I tell people the first thing you need is cash, because nothing happens without cash. Secondly, you need hot sauce to make the food that you eat palatable, and you need one of my DPX gear knives for self-defense. Just pragmatic.
You're still making those knives?
Yeah, we have on Kickstarter. We just went crazy on Kickstarter. We just created an all-American pocket knife, and it got funded within 24 hours, and it's going insane. You can Google the DPX Hest Urban Pocket Knife. It's our first all-American made pocket knife.
Amazing. Good for you. How much did you raise on something like that?
About 90,000 bucks over the last few days.
That fast?
Yeah, check it out. I mean, I like to design beautiful things. I have about 14 patents in my name, and I want to make an all-American pocket knife that makes Americans make money so they can spend money on American things, and it's the highest quality.
Wow, good for you. Yeah. Good for you. How do you promote something like that?
I have a lot of people that like what I do, and they like the idea that I like making things in America, and I like making very high-quality things, and I test them, and I back them myself, so... go to Kickstarter and check it out. We're almost all sold out, but we'll be doing other knives, and I love bringing things back to America.
Yeah, you do. You do. We need about the 10 million people like you. Frank in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hey, Frank, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Frank.
I'd first like to wish you and your guests a happy, wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you, too. Thank you.
And my comment is that... I'm sure that these misguided young men are going to realize, and women are going to realize, when the flames of hell are licking up around their gonads, they were sadly mistaken.
That's right.
Tell me,
and the virgins
aren't there.
Our military
doesn't have weapons that can be strategically used to take out every one of these major places all at the same time, and within 48 hours, wipe out these people totally. What do you think?
That's a good point. You mentioned women. One of the things that people always forget is the strong support that terrorist groups get from widows, from older ladies. And I always like to tell jihadis that nobody said how old these 72 virgins were.
They got it wrong. It's one virgin. She's 72.
Exactly. But the point is, can we take these people out? No, there's a very small group of people within millions and millions of innocent people. So we're not dealing with entire nations trying to kill us.
This mindset of blowing yourself up, I got to believe, Robert, that these people are higher than a kite when they're out there doing what they're doing. They've got to be on some kind of drug or something, because no normal person... One would just go in and kill people. You got to be sick to do that. But then to blow yourself up, just the process of thinking about that is unbelievable.
Well, so I know these people, and I can tell you three things that happen. First of all, you have to have a lack of hope. In other words, there has to be nothing on the horizon that looks any better than today. And then secondly, you have to be within a confined group that all believes the same thing. In other words, if you do this, we'll give money to your parents, you'll go to heaven, things will be better. And thirdly, yes, you have to get into this emotional experience in which you essentially erase common sense. And a lot of times they use drugs. I mean, it's even when they cut people's heads off, they'll tend to give drugs to the people they're killing. They tend to use speed when they're fighting, so if they get shot, they don't have the same kind of reaction. When they kill themselves, they give them tranquilizers. You notice they don't do a lot of autopsies on these people. There's a few bits and pieces left, but you'll find that in most cases, there is the use of drugs, usually tranquilizers, to make people sort of lose that edge.
And yes, very, and go crazy.
Well, they also methodically walk around and shoot people, right? So they have this sort of robot-type approach. So just like school shooters in the States, I really think we have to get beyond the labels and start looking at these people as crazed members of society who are selected by certain manipulative groups and told to do very violent things. And we have to look at the media side of it, saying, why are you elevating these people to being something that represents a group when in actual fact it's an individual decision to blow yourself up?
Do we know how these individuals got into the theater in Paris with their assault weapons? I mean, wasn't there a metal detector or anything?
Well, typically, if you fire one shot, typically before you do an ambush, if you fire a shot over here, everybody will look over there, and you can literally walk right past everyone. So I don't believe that you need that much to get into a traditional civilian.
Well, yeah, the concert was going for a while. I mean, it's not like they walked in shooting instantly, I don't think.
Right.
I mean, they were already in there, weren't they?
Yes, and what I'm saying is that somebody goes in to facilitate, and then the other people come in. And I don't have a forensic report on the shootings in the theater, but typically when you do an ambush, I can fire one gun, everybody looks over there, and I can do whatever I want because nobody sees me walking right up to them.
Right. Steve is in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Steve. Thank you.
Hello, George, and hello, Robert. Yeah, I just want to make a comment, Robert. It's a very interesting talk you gave, but the main idea that I take away from your entire talk over the last hour is that the Middle East right now, at least from our perspective, our way of thinking and our way of looking at the world and regarding our ability to do anything, the Middle East right now is a region of irrationality and chaos. Now, it seems to me that given that fact, we can't help them at this point. All they can do is destroy us. Now, it would seem to me prudent and rational to, until we get this geopolitical mess straightened out and figure out, you know, and people start to become wise to the fact that it's global economics that's screwing the whole globe up. But that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. But at this point in time, I think we should focus our priorities on defending our nation. We should put a complete moratorium on all immigration and a moratorium on accepting refugees, because there's 6 billion people in the world, and if we let this global chaos continue and with the demeanor that we accept everyone, we're going to have 6 billion people trying to get into this country, which is nonsensical. We've got to defend our country first, figure out why this mess keeps on happening, and then maybe try to help other people. But right now, we have to think about defending our people, our citizens, and this country.
Well, let me answer that. ISIS, which is a very small group of people who don't have any political agenda or humanitarian agenda, want you to fear migrants. They want you to fear 59 million people on this planet. They want you to fear Islam. They want you to fear a much larger group that has nothing to do with them. So be careful about being walked into the propaganda trap.
Why didn't this happen a long time ago, Robert? Why is this happening now? How come not? Why not 20 years ago?
No, but it has happened. You know, we all hated and feared the Jews. We all hated and feared the Irish. We hated and feared the Huns. I mean, this is fairly typical when there's a cataclysmic upheaval in society, and we don't understand why they're all coming here, why they all are angry and trying to kill us. So I say two things. One is, do your research on what actually is happening, because you'll find that what is really happening is much different than the sort of Fox News or sort of simplistic explanations. And secondly, start throwing these labels away and look at what's actually motivating these people to do what they do. And you find that these are very isolated, small, violent things. ISIS is not going to mount a battalion of Marines and invade the shores of California anytime soon. They're going to do this small, violent, much amplified effect, which is going to terrify and tie down everybody as they basically then go after law-abiding people and make them register and do all the things that, you know, Stalin would do under the guise of keeping you safe. So be careful. We don't fall into that trap.
You know, I was raised, I don't see color. I don't see religion. People are people as far as I'm concerned. This bitterness of hatred and racism and everything. Man, there's something wrong with a human being, Robert. There's something wrong.
Well, here's the thing. We are taught to think in simplistic terms because we watch television, we read the internet, and we have to stop thinking in those simplistic terms. If somebody said to me that anybody from Lebanon was a terrorist because here's a picture of a terrorist, I would then spend 15 minutes going, wow, look how many people actually come from Lebanon of how many different faiths, ethnic backgrounds. So this is what we have to do, is educate ourselves, not be terrified by simplistic messages.
Robert, thank you so much. Stay safe in Malta, my friend. Up next, Greg Braden joins us as we talk about the power to thrive in life's extremes. Boy, can you think of something more important than that? We'll be back.